The next...
Good day.
Oh, good day, thank you so much. The next case on our calendar is A24-0085, Makesha Pauline Barnes versus Andrew Christopher Lee. I apologize if I didn't pronounce Makesha correctly. Counsel, and then the, just counsel, our rules are just only counsel in front of the bar. So it's not meant to be rude, it's just a general rule that we have for everyone, so thank you.
I'm good.
Good morning.
So go ahead and set up, take your time and set up. I'll do some introductory.
What I see remarks. on my side of the placard is appellant.
Appellant is here.
Okay, and so
I
think that that's...
Yep. I was just going to mention that if, yeah, it looked like that up.
Thanks.
Thank you for noticing that. I'll let you pull out your things. Counsel, each of you will have 15 minutes for your principal argument. And then, counsel for appellant, if you choose to use it, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Okay? So 15, 15, and 5. And at the start of each of your principal arguments, if you could please state your name and the party you represent. And we are making an audio of recording of this oral argument. It'll appear later on our public website. That's the only recording that's permitted. And the podium, counsel, has a toggle switch sort of waist high to go up and down. Sort of at your waist, sort of like right at your waist, there's a toggle. Do you see it?
Yes.
Okay. So, counsel for appellant, you can go ahead when you're set up and go ahead and take the podium, and then we will be ready for you.
May it please the court. I am Eric Richard. I am the attorney for the appellant, Makesha Barnes, and we are appealing a decision of the district court that the appellant did not make a case that a harassment restraining order should be issued because the court found she did not prove that harassment occurred. The district court was very explicit in citing the case Witchell v. Witchell, which was another case where there were two parents who had communication that I would describe was terse and impolite, but the district court and the court of appeals found that it did not meet the requirements for harassment. In our case, however, we believe the evidence is very, very different, and it is not merely impolite, but is the very definition of repeated incidents of intrusive and unwanted acts, words, or gestures that have a substantial adverse effect or are intended to have a substantial adverse effect on the safety, security, or privacy of another. We believe that it was abuse of discretion by the district court to find that harassment was not proven, and we believe that the decision of the district court should be reversed. The record clearly indicates there were multiple messages from the respondent to the appellant that included attachments of prior sex videos of the parties when they were married. At the time that the messages were sent, the parties were divorced. They had not reconciled in any way. They had not...
Can we speak about those? So as I understand that those videos were sent on September 12th.
Yep.
And then again on September 23rd.
Correct.
There was maybe, I don't know if there's a total of two videos or three, but it seemed like two to me.
Yeah, there's right? More than two, Your Honor.
More than two videos?
Yes.
Okay. So, but three emails?
Yes.
Right?
To begin with.
Well, that attached videos. There's two on September 12th and one on September 23rd. Am I wrong about that?
There was another video, Your Honor, that the respondent sent after an argument where he was angry with petitioner for not responding to his emails.
Is that not September 23rd?
No, it was later.
What date is it? I'm looking at exhibits 4, 5, 6, and 13.
Okay. So maybe it is exhibit 13, Your Honor.
And the reason I ask, I just wanted to set the stage for what it is. I mean, to me, it looked like the first exhibits that were entered have to do with September 12th. That was it. I think there might have been actually a 9-6 exhibit asking to be on a football list. But otherwise, we're at September 12th. There are those emails that attach. And then there's an exhibit. Then there's, it seemed like on September 23rd, there are a lot of emails over the course of that day dealing with different topics. From the respondent, and then I think later at night, another video gets sent.
Yes.
And then a response from, I believe, your client saying to stop sending emails. I think that all occurs on 9/23.
Yes.
And then a response saying, oh, okay, I didn't know you didn't want them. That occurs on 9/23. So 9/23 has a date, right?
Is that correct?
Okay.
Yes.
So the testimony about, I mean, the fact that there, what is it about that, and what testimony is there that both subjectively and objectively shows that it's threatened, or that it would be substantially affect the safety, security, and privacy of your client?
Okay. So, Your Honor, the appellant was asked if she found the messages offensive, and she responded, this is at the transcript at pages 21 and 22, I did. One, it's to my co-parenting email. I created the co-parenting email so that matters for the kids could be separate. I didn't find this to be related to the kids and us taking care of our kids. It's personal. It's really Andrew's feelings. It shouldn't have been sent to my co-parenting email. Also, it just brings up a lot of history from before we were married, during our marriage, our divorce, and how things ended. He has a lot of allegations. He's swearing at me, bringing up things that, you know, made me just feel disrespected. And I think it's important to note, Your Honor, that he refers to sex acts, talks about other people that he alleges that she slept with.
Counsel, I'm going to just interrupt for a second. I don't think there's going to be any disagreement that these are offensive communications. In your brief, you mentioned that they're vulgar, insulting, sexual in nature, and offensive, in distinguishing it from the Witchell decision. And you go on to talk about how offensive they are also in your brief. The statutory focus is on safety, security, and privacy.
Mm-hmm.
Privacy suggests a third party being involved, and I don't see a third party involved here. They weren't disseminated to others, as far as I can see. So we're really talking about safety and security.
Mm-hmm.
The district court didn't feel that the offensiveness nature, vulgar and insulting nature of these emails and the videos crossed into a threat to safety and security. What is your argument to suggest that they do?
The fact that a former husband possesses and is sending sex videos to his wife when he's having an argument with her and doesn't like the way the conversation is going and claims that she's disrespecting him by not responding to his emails that are basically insults and not questions or, you know, any attempt at formal dialogue, sends her the message that if you don't do what I say, then you possess these videos that you can use against me, and you're not afraid to send them to me to remind me that you possess
these
videos.
Didn't she ask him to stop, and he did?
She asked him to stop through a letter through the attorneys, and then the next time they had face-to-face conversation, she testified that he pushed her to ground at a football game that he told her not to attend because he felt disrespected. And so given the totality of the circumstances and how unreasonable the respondent is, this person needs the protection of the court.
Well, okay, let me just go back to that. You mentioned the push and the shove at the football game.
Yes.
Now, the court has to judge the credibility of the witnesses, and mm-hmm. there were no witnesses other than the two of them, as I understood it, correct?
There was just the two witnesses, but I also believe that the respondent relied heavily on the fact that police went to the scene and didn't arrest him, and we think it was improper for the respondent to rely so heavily on the actions of the police.
Because well, I don't disagree with that, but I'm going back to the court having to decide credibility of witnesses and and listen to your client and to the respondent and made a determination. Is that essentially what happened as to the assault?
The court did not find that they believed her, but I would point out that she also explained that when she went to the home, that he swore at her and followed her to her car. And if you look at just how offensive these messages are in writing, we think that his credibility should be called into question when he denies these things. We think that there's so much evidence of a sense of entitlement to be able to say and do whatever he wants.
You agree the district court decides credibility issues?
The district court does decide the credibility. And so I don't believe, Your Honor, that when messages are this offensive and when there's an exhibit in which the respondent admits that he knows that they were offensive to her and sent her messages after that anyway, that it can be cured because the person who's receiving the offensive messages asked them to stop. At some point, the amount of offensive messages that the content of those messages is so inappropriate that it can't be cured simply by the victim asking that person to stop.
So there were, I mean, and what we're getting, why we keep focusing on this, of course, is we're, as you know, an appellate court, and
correct,
the district court is the one hearing directly from the witnesses and reading it, and of course, the district court made clear the court's view about the inappropriateness of the communications. But the question is, is it required that the district, we would have to find it was, the district court had to find, it's a total abuse of discretion not to find that there was a threat to safety, security, or privacy.
That's right.
And when you say about the curing it and that there were offensive or offensive messages that came after the request to stop, what offensive messages are you talking about then?
So what I'm saying is, and I apologize if I've not been clear, so Many offensive messages were sent. She asked him to stop. His immediate response was no. And then he sent six more messages. And then he sent another sex video to her private email after she asked him to stop. Then I wrote a letter.
After she asked him to stop sending inappropriate generally,
messages.
Not after stop sending sex videos. He did stop after that. But she had earlier asked him to stop talking about things that were outside of the kids.
So,
I think he's even all in that same day, and yet still he sent the video.
So to be clear, Your Honor, the parties were having, well, it was mostly a one-way discussion of the respondent saying very offensive things to the appellant. She wasn't responding because there was nothing to say. There was no questions. She didn't have to defend herself against the profanity and the sex talk. There was nothing for her to say, but then he was furious that she didn't respond. So then he sent her an email to her private email that included a sex video. So that entire conversation started with, stop sending me offensive messages. He said no. He sent another five messages, and then he sent a sex video to her private email. So this is what, this was his response to her asking him to stop. And we believe that that's the very definition of someone who's in need of a restraining order, when it's not just saying things that someone doesn't want to hear. He's talking about relationships. He's saying they should still be together again. I mean, I can't imagine someone being in her position having to deal with something that's more emotionally abusive than what's in this record here today. And I want to emphasize the word emotional abuse. Protection of fear of harm in the face of emotionally abusive messages, messages that include sex tapes that he has from when they were together that were consensual at the time before they divorced. She does feel threatened, Your Honors, because if she doesn't do what she's told to do, if she doesn't respond, it's unclear what he wants her to say, right? When he's just letting her have it, but he's mad that she doesn't respond to these messages and then sends her a sex tape. I can't imagine a record that's stronger for a person to say, I need the court, not just to lecture the person for 2 minutes, but then say that you win and the restraining order is denied. We need an order that says you are prohibited from doing this. And I would also point out to the court that in the course of this conversation, the respondent said, always remember, you can't war with me. How many losses you want to take? HRO and divorce, I'm up 2-0, you can't beat me. Just join me, baby girl. I mean, he's used the fact that the court decided in his favor on the divorce and the parenting time issue, and that she had previously sought an HRO against her to say, it doesn't matter what I say. I can say whatever I want. And so I can get away with
it. If I can interrupt just for a minute. So I looked, and there are very few appeals of denials of harassment restraining orders. So you may have answered this question in response to Judge Smith near the beginning of your argument. But if we were to say, yes, this seems like it satisfies the statute, a lot of this is not disputed. You know, it is what it is. And is the district court then obligated to fashion some sort of harassment restraining order, whatever that might look like? Or does the district court still have some level of discretion to say, yeah, I get this, but I still am not going to order it?
The law is that the district court has some discretion, but I think that the weight of the evidence here is so strong, I can't imagine a record that would be more offensive than what we have in front of us. I honestly can't. And what I ask the court to consider is that the message that it sends to the victim, don't come forward and complain about this contact, because if you lose, it's going to be put in your face over and over again. He's done it before. It's in writing. He'll do it again.
But counsel, I understand what you're saying, and I understand how offensive these communications are, and I think we all do. Seems to me you're asking for an offensiveness standard, which the statute doesn't address. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of offensive communications between spouses that are split up, admittedly not this bad. But going back to what Judge Siegel just asked, the statute does say district court may issue an HRO.
Correct.
So you're asking us to essentially direct them to do it.
I believe that there is an amount of evidence that is so strong that it defines why we have a harassment restraining order, Your Honor. And so you said that, I'm asking for an offensive standard. I'm asking the evidence be applied to the statute. Repeated incidents of intrusive and unwanted acts, word, or gestures that have a substantial adverse effect or are intended to have a substantial adverse effect on the safety, security, or privacy of another. Sending a sex video to somebody after you've admitted that they find them offensive, after she's asked you to stop, to let that person know, hey, I've got this, and you can't do anything about it, that impacts her safety, security, or privacy.
Well, you're talking about the video again.
Yes.
But didn't the court make it very clear that if that video was disseminated, this would be a totally different case?
Mm-hmm. Pardon?
Didn't the district court make it clear that if that video was disseminated to a third party, this would be a totally different case?
Right, but that's not the fact on the record. The fact on the record is he was sending these to her, and we're bringing a harassment restraining order. We weren't bringing a criminal case. We weren't alleging that it was shared with a third person, but we are saying it could be shared with a third person. And the fact that he's reminding her that he has these, we believe that the message that he's sending to her is clear. And we think that does impact a person's safety, security, or privacy.
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Ben Gisselman, and I am here today representing the responding party, Andrew Lee. I'll start just by stating to the court that our position is that the district court got it right. Based on the evidence and the testimony presented, that the determination by the court that the allegations weren't proven and that the harassment restraining order should not be...
What was not proven? Because I've looked at the emails, and there's one email in particular on September 23. just know if you bring any man into my boy's life that disrespect them in the slightest way, a Bear Hill Dem have to pay. You never met Drew L. I only showed you Andrew. And then there are devil and skull emojis. So how does that factor into that not being a threatening email?
Well, I think...
And a threatening message. I mean, it seems to me like it is, aside from the other things that have been communicated.
Well, I think at the end of the day, and as has been somewhat stated today, I mean, the discretion really is given to the trial court to gauge the evidence and the credibility of the witnesses. And I think that in regards to specifically what you're asking about, Judge Siegel, is I think the court may have found that offensive. The court may have relied on the Witchell case to interpret it as immature conduct on the part of the respondent, but I don't believe, based upon the testimony before the court from Ms. Barnes, that the court found that that rose to the level of what would be harassing conduct under the statute.
Counsel, our concern, of course, is when it gets past offensive, as the district court's concern is, to a safety or security issue, particularly. Judge Siegel cited one communication. The one that I found particularly bothersome was, sometimes I think maybe I should have abused you like another man did because you still showed more loyalty to him. That's arguably a threat.
I think, again, I would go back to the same argument in looking at the actual trial court record, and specifically regarding some of these exhibits. I think that a review of the transcript will show, I believe that some of these exhibits were explained in more detail in appellant's brief before this court than they were described in the appellant's own testimony before this trial court judge. And I'm not suggesting that the exhibit that you're talking about doesn't make it into evidence, because these were received and they're part of the court's record. But I want to suggest that a variety of these exhibits, I think both of the exhibits that the two of Your Honors just referenced, weren't actually corroborated as part of testimony before the court. And I think the reason...
Wait, those exhibits came in without objection. So what was not corroborated? I mean, your client never said, I never sent those. Somebody co-opted my email server. I never sent those. So what... If you could just narrow down to what it is that's not corroborated.
Well, I guess what I'm suggesting is, again, I think, you know, the record reflects that both parties testified. The record reflects that there were 12 exhibits that were received from appellant. The record reflects that there was more than a two-hour hearing and an 83-page transcript. And then the court made a ruling, and I am suggesting to this court that if the standard is whether or not the district court abused its discretion, if the standard is that this court is upholding principles that it has applied in the past, that due regard is given to the district court's opportunity to judge the credibility of the witnesses and the evidence, I am making this point that because there wasn't corroborating testimony as part of the record about whether or not these things threatened the appellant's safety, security, privacy, these things that we find under the statute, I think because we don't see a substantial amount of that in the actual trial court record, that is not what was before the court when the court made this decision. Or if it wasn't before the court, certainly it was in a written form. If it wasn't before the court, though, in the corroborating oral testimony way that I'm suggesting, it should be taken into account when this court gauges the appropriateness.
Well, aren't we kind of assuming, though? I mean, we've got the couple paragraphs that are in the record, and then we have not proven. Could we say, look, the court was looking at Witchell. Witchell is not the only harassment restraining order case. We think the district court applied too high a legal standard in remand. I mean, this is a problem in all these cases, you know, because there are not elaborate findings. But would that be violating our role as an appellate court to say, geez, it looks like this district, or tell us, like, did you find um, appellant's testimony not credible, that she felt harassed or that she felt scared. And so therefore, I don't think it rises to the level. I mean, should we remand for findings?
Well, I think just from a finding standpoint, I think, Your Honor, you just noted that many of these HRO or OFP cases are oftentimes decided, perhaps you see, without a significant level of written findings. I do think that this judge did make remarks on the record itself that I think we could interpret as findings. And this case was a little bit strange. You asked earlier, Judge Siegel, and I'm sorry if I'm saying that wrong, you remarked about how
Miss... No, you got it right. It's not like the actor.
Seagal, okay. But Mr. You asked, or you pointed out that Mr. Lee didn't oppose some of the things that were in these messages. Well, part of that was because after the petitioner presented her case, I asked if the court would make it essentially a directed verdict or something of this nature based on what was presented so far, and the court granted that and decided I don't need to hear any more on these things, and then moved us on really to this physical incident that she really wanted, that the court really wanted to focus on. And so, you know, I guess in a roundabout way answering your question, I would suggest that if the court takes cases like these and looks at meager findings that suggest something like the allegations simply weren't proven and remands it back for further findings, I think that would go beyond the scope of what this court should do in these kinds of proceedings. And again, I think it would go against the premise that great deference should really be given to the trial court judge's, you know, role in assessing the evidence and the credibility of the people before it.
Can you speak to the argument that, especially on September 23rd, when there was a litany of complaining emails from your client, that, and I believe then during that day, a request to have emails only relate to the children, not anything beyond that, and then I think late at night, 10 maybe at night or something, a sex tape is sent by your client. Why could that be read as anything other than, you know, implicitly threatening or and certainly invading privacy of that person by a suggestion, you know, in the heat of like a hostile set of emails and a request not to send non-child related things that is sent?
Well, two things. I guess I'll just start with this, the concept that she asked the respondent to stop. And then there were messages after that. I think the record is clear that once there was communication between the attorneys about stopping the communication, that the communication did stop. And I think that the appellant acknowledges that.
What communication? I'm talking about just that day's worth of communications. So, I think that there was a request to stop saying non-child-related things.
And so getting back to answering your question in that specific day, first, I just want to point out that the reference to these videos that the court has already asked about today, none of the videos were submitted as evidence to the trial court. There was no transcript of any audio of any video, so I just want to make clear that the reference to these videos in these emails referenced them, but they weren't before the court in making the decision that the court did. As far as invading...
There's no dispute about their contents. Right? I mean, they describe...
Well,
I mean, I don't know that they have to be theirs, but because it doesn't seem like anyone disputed what they contained.
I just think I would just suggest that the court didn't make any findings about the content of the videos because they weren't before the court. And I just want to make sure this court understands that those videos weren't before the court. That's important because we can't just infer that a video...
Oh, I thought you agreed that and actually referred to them as being explicit videos. I mean, I don't think you can shy away from that. I don't know that we need to know. I agree with you, the content. But, I think you yourself characterized them as explicit in the hearings before the district court.
And maybe if I characterize them as explicit or naked videos here today or inappropriate videos here today, that still gets us to the question, though, of whether they invade the privacy of the appellant in this case to the rise.
Or make them feel threatened in their safety, security, or privacy. If after a day of that gets back to my question, there's hostile communication from your client, and then that's sent. And I think the argument is the only reasonable way to read that is sort of look what I have. Look what I have about us.
Well, I also think there was testimony about remarks about getting back together, these kinds of things. So I think that, first of all, I feel like we're drawing inferences that the court didn't, and I suppose that's part of what we do here. But I think inferences can be drawn that he was sending them saying, look what could have been, these kinds of things, as opposed to being threatening. I think that we're assuming that it was threatening the privacy, safety, security of the appellant, and I say that because I don't think that she testified specifically that that's how the videos made her feel. To Judge Cleary's point, I do think because they were disseminated by the respondent to the appellant and only the two of them that they don't rise to the level of what's defined under the actual harassment statute as harassing conduct.
But it doesn't have to qualify as a violation of 609 point whatever the provision is to in fact make you, I mean, feel insecure. He's got these videos and he can do anything with them. I mean, I think that was the implication that appellant's counsel was suggesting.
And if that was the implication, well, the court is suggesting that was the implication. I don't think there's anything in the testimony of the appellant that suggests that she felt like, for example, the respondent was going to use these videos to threaten her or to garner some leverage over her relating to their parenting time issues or something of this nature. I don't believe that's reflected in the actual record. And it wasn't in the record before the court. Going back to our argument, again, I was just emphasizing before the court that, as the court knows, we're really looking at this.
What about, all right, just to dot that I think that the appellant testified relative to the videos. I don't know what else with these videos. I don't know what else, you know, pictures, videos he might have. And, you know, I just don't know what they could be used for, I guess, any moment when he's upset. I mean, doesn't that speak to a concern that the videos will be misused? I mean, I appreciate your argument. I mean, I understand your arguments about inferences, but isn't that I think the argument is from the opposing counsel, that's the only reasonable inference that one would draw from the series of events and that testimony.
I would just respectfully argue that that was not the inference that the trial court drew in reaching the decision that it did. And the trial court was in the best position that day to gauge the evidence and the testimony that it was hearing. I would say in conclusion, really the appellant's burden to show that the findings are not supported by the evidence, we're suggesting that that burden has not been met here, that the evidence presented before the trial court did support the dismissal. The trial court, again, was in the best position to make that determination. And I think that, you know, under questioning, I think it was by you, Judge Cleary, I mean, the district court, you know, is the determiner of the credibility of the evidence and the witnesses. And based upon that, we're respectfully asking that the court uphold the trial court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes.
And so, Your Honors, I do want to talk about the record. There was reference made to the record. I admit it was a conscious decision on my part that when you have what was said in writing, not to have my client read it out loud because of the impact it would have on her. It's difficult enough to bring a restraining order against someone who's engaging in emotional abuse against you, but I didn't want her to have to read out loud the offensive things that he'd said to her because I think the record was made. With regard to the videotapes, after the respondent, through his counsel, admitted that the videotapes were explicit, I thought that made the record. I didn't want to have to show the videos to the court. I'm guessing the court didn't want to see them. With regard to inferences, I believe the Court of Appeals has adequately addressed that in pointing out that the appellant did testify, I thought rather eloquently, that she didn't know what he was going to do with the videos. And so in a situation where we have the amount of profanity, the number of references towards sex, and not just references towards sex, he's making it clear he wants to be with her again. And that does impact her safety and security, because she has never once intimated that she wants to reinitiate the relationship with him. We believe the record's been made that does impact her safety and security. And when the record is that strong, we would ask the court consider that for someone in her position who is the victim of emotional and emotional abuse repeatedly, we don't want to discourage those people from seeking the assistance of the court. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both for your briefing. Thank you for your arguments. The case is submitted. We'll have a decision out within the statutory time period.
Thank you.
Thank you.